Hi, I'm Drew Mandel. 2020 has been a bad enough year. The only thing that could make it worse is a tragic accident involving a sharp blade and your sensitive area. Precautions are necessary to keep your nether regions safe, and our friends at Manscaped have an entire line of products to keep your sensitive areas tragedy-free. Take it from us at Illegal Curve. One circumcision is enough for a lifetime. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
And it's all Winnipeg at even strength. Exit out of the zone. Quick little chip play there by Cobb. Stastny gets it. Gets to his backhand. And again, another soft goal given up by Pekarinen.
What was once old is now new again. Paul Stastny back in 2018 against the Nashville Predators scoring for the Winnipeg Jets in that Game 7, ending that epic series that the Jets ended up winning on their way to the Western Conference Final. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets. Day one of NHL free agency in the books. What does day two have in store? We're talking about the NHL draft. That was only 5 days ago. It seems like it was 5 months ago after the hecticness of yesterday. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I am your host, Drew Mandel. As I mentioned, gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Dave, have you exhaled after what has been an epically busy 48 hours for you?
I have, but you know what? I said on Twitter, it's one of the most fun times of the year.
Sure.
It really is. From the draft, I mean, obviously in 2020, it's been a little more chaotic than usual, but it's just been so, it's exhilarating. It really is. It's fun. It's a fun kind of work. And honestly, it's my favorite time of the year.
And the amazing thing is, guys, that we knew it was going to be hectic from an NHL standpoint, and we knew with the draft and, you know, all of the, you know, hoopla surrounding the 10th overall pick, you know, we knew that it was going to be exciting to cover and exciting for Jets fans. We didn't think that Cole Perfetti was going to fall till number 10, but we just didn't think there was going to be this much movement, right? We thought Chevy might sign maybe one or two players, but when you had the Paul Stastny news breaking, you know, late Thursday night or, you know, early Thursday night, I think it was around 8 or 9 when the rumors really started to fly that, you know, Scott Billick, Mike McIntyre, Jason Bell, you know, started to confirm that that trade was happening. And then, you know, we got official word yesterday morning, but unbelievable that Paul Stastny is coming back to Winnipeg and it only costs you a fourth round pick. But then, you know, it seemed like you had news item after news item, not only, you know, some of the RFAs like Mason Appleton and Nathan Beaulieu signed, even though I think Beaulieu was a pending UFA.
He was UFA.
The little news. I mean, the little news is also, you know, really significant, guys, and really unfortunate because, you know, we all wanted, you know, Brian Little to come back and play for the Jets, you know, whether that's, you know, on the third line, fourth line, it doesn't matter. This isn't about hockey. This is about a guy's career here, so we wish him all the best. Yeah. But a very newsy Friday, that's for sure.
Definitely the case, and we'll get started by talking about the news from the Jets forwards perspective, and it leads us into our Illegal Curve question of the day. We do want to hear from you about this. You can send us your comments via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can send us your comments via text, 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. After day one of free agency, after the reacquisition of Paul Stastny and the re-signing earlier this week of Dylan DeMello, how would you describe the Winnipeg Jets' chances and the team's trajectory for the 2021 NHL season?
I didn't even mention Dylan DeMello there. I mean,
we'll get to that later on in the show.
No,
for
but
sure.
It almost seems like that was a week ago, right? That was, I think, 3 days ago that DeMello re-signed. And, you know, that's almost, to me, as significant, guys, as reacquiring Paul Stastny, because when you look at what DeMelo was able to do, and I know, Drew, that you have the show plan and you want to get into that later, but, you know, just looking at the Jets' moves from a macro level, to me at least, and you guys might disagree, I mean, having a top-pairing right-side defenseman, or even if he plays second pair, Dave, it's important to get him back because that's what the Jets needed. They needed to solidify that top four. Yes, there are questions about that, you know, second pair left side defenseman. Is that going to be Ville Heinola? The reality is, guys, we don't know at this point. So just wanted to get that in there that I think that signing is very crucial because even though DeMelo doesn't give you a ton of goals, doesn't give you a ton of assists, he's one of those prototypical shutdown defensemen that the Jets, I think, really needed to get locked down.
Let's start talking about Paul Stastny and the other moves related to the Jets forward group. The news, as he mentioned, was sort of late Thursday evening. Dave, you were sort of all over this from the outset, you know, connecting the dots between Paul Stastny and the Winnipeg Jets. We know the Golden Knights were looking to shed some salary.
Yep.
They're in the Alex Pietrangelo sweepstakes, and you know, the guy that, you know, everyone had circled on their roster was Stastny. He fits seamlessly with what the Jets are needed in that second line center role. The chemistry that he's previously had with Line A and Ehlers, albeit in the shorter sample size after he was acquired from the St. Louis Blues. So the Jets reacquire Stastny in exchange for that fourth round pick and defenseman Carl Dahlstrom. I mean, it seems like a pretty good acquisition, and it seems like a perfect bridge to the Cole Perfetti era, when you know, assuming that Perfetti needs a year, you know, maybe 2 years still in junior worth of seasoning before he's ready to step into the NHL. But the scenario sort of played out as well as the Jets could have hoped this week.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have to be a little more relaxed when it comes to plugging draft picks into the second line center position. I mean, you had a guy in Jack Roslovic who was a center with the Manitoba Moose, you know, center in college, and then went on to the play of the wing. So, you know, you don't just become a second-line center in the NHL just because
that's
the way you were drafted. So people were already, like, upset because they're like, well, this is taking Perfetti's spot. I'm like, well, no, guys. Like, Perfetti is most likely playing in the OHL next year. So you have to focus on what Paul Stastny does. Paul Stastny is not the player he was when the Jets had him, but he's still a pretty good player. He's still a top-six player. And I think, to your point, Drew, he provides chemistry with Line A and Ehlers that we haven't seen from anybody really.
Anybody else. Nobody else that has had the opportunity to play the center line position with Line A and Ehlers has been able to click with them as well as Stastny did when he came over from St. Louis.
And what it allows you to have really is a line 1A and a 1B, right? You have the Scheifele Wheeler, you know, Connor pairing, and then trio, and then you have the secondary trio. And you know, that's not really a secondary trio. It's pretty good.
Like you said, 1A, 1B.
That's really what the team needs, right? You know, you need that balance. That's going to go throughout the whole lineup. You're not now trying to plug some guy in from the third line, you know, an Andrew Copp style guy into that second line center position now. You've got that guy who's now your second line center, and that just gives you the consistency that your team needs. And, I mean, what have we been talking about? The Jets need a second-line center. Okay, now do they need and you know, the people lamenting this, I just don't understand it because he's on a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not taking on a guy, like you're not signing some 34-year-old guy, 32-year-old guy to a four-year deal, which you know you're going to hate because it's going to take up a spot for a young player next season. In two seasons.
It's a perfect bridge.
That's right. So it provides you exactly what you need. You didn't have to give up much for it. You know, you gave up a fourth. And you gave
in 2022.
Yeah. And so, you know, and the reality is also from a cash perspective, from the Jets' point of view, they're only, even though his contract, his salary cap hit is
six and a half.
Yeah. They're only paying him five and a half in actual dollars. And you've cut the Dahlstrom money out. So really, yesterday was about a $4.5 million sort of situation for Winnipeg.
This is a great move. I agree with you guys. It's not a perfect move, and you know I realize that you know not everybody was maybe as excited about the move as others. But I agree with Dave in the sense that when you talk about that last year left on the contract, you know you're getting someone obviously that you're familiar with, but let's take you know, the 35 years, Stastny is turning 35 years old, you know, in December. Let's take that out of the equation for the simple fact that Stastny is an excellent hockey player. I mean, this is a guy that has played almost 1,000 games. He's got over 700 career points. And I agree with Dave. Stastny is not the guy he was in 2018. He's not the guy that was putting up 70 points with the Colorado Avalanche earlier in his career. He's probably more of a 45 to 50 point guy. You put him with Ehlers and Line A, you know, maybe he gets around 55, 60 points, but that's not what it's about. You nailed it. The Jets have their second line center. That's what they needed. And, you know, whether you want to say it's a bridge for Perfetti or just a bridge for, you know, whoever is going to take over that second line center role, the idea is this is someone that you're getting for one, maybe two, 3 years. Like, Stastny could always sign another contract with the Jets, but this is a short-term fix. This is a guy who comes in and he makes you a better team, right? Like,
he makes you a better team today.
Yes. And
immediately.
And that's what it's about. Yes. Cole Perfetti is going to be a very good NHL player. Like, I'm personally very excited to see what he can do in Jets training camp. And, you know, he's put up 100 points as an 18-year-old in the Ontario Hockey League. And I agree with Dave. Like, you can't pencil in an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old even as your second line center. Like, look at Mark Scheifele. Look at Josh Morrissey, Kyle Connor. These guys played a year or two in junior, or when you're talking about Connor, a year with the University of Michigan before they made that jump, right? So Perfetti, 1 year, 2 years, it doesn't matter. Perfetti is not going to be your second line center. Maybe he plays some games for the Jets and then he doesn't, you know, burn that entry level deal. Like, I could see that, Perfetti playing, you know, 6, 7, 8 games, something like that. But back to Stastny here. I mean, this just makes so much sense for so many different reasons. Yes, there's a familiarity, and you mentioned small sample size, Drew. But that small sample size got the Jets to the West Final. So I'm not saying that the Jets, by getting Stastny, are going back to the West Final. But what I'm saying is Stastny is an excellent two-way center, a great, an above-average second-line center, even at 35 years old.
Well, 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago, after the Jets lost to the Flames and we started doing our post-mortem, we started evaluating the team going forward, like we have for years at this point, we've said, you know, what is the off-season priority for the Winnipeg Jets? And it was obviously, you know, left-side defense, and that's still a gaping hole, and we'll talk about that, and it's second-line center. And not trading Patrick Laine, which
they, that's right.
You know, notice that they still have not traded Patrick Laine because it never made a damn lick of sense from the get-go. But, you know, after yesterday, the Jets no longer have that second-line center hole. And, you know, that is what you would declare as a win. It cost you nothing in terms of assets, cost you some money and some cap space that you had, but you've solved that problem. Now, I would caution people to immediately assume that it's going to be as magically successful as it was, you know, when Ehlers and Stastny and Laine played together a couple years ago. You know, Stastny's a couple years older. His shooting percentage when he was with the Jets in that time was, you know, outrageously high and was unsustainable. But you never know how the future is going to play out. So this is a pretty good bet to make. If you had to pick a second line center from around the league that isn't going to hamstring you for years to come and isn't going to block the development of other players, this is a pretty good solution to that problem.
And going back to what we said before, the people, you know, that are saying, well, the Jets are helping the Golden Knights out with cap space and they're acquiring a 35-year-old player. It's like, yes. And all they gave up was a 22 fourth round pick to get that second line center. Like, this is the thing. Like, we watch hockey, and for everybody that watches hockey, you watch Vegas go to the West Final. Like, Stastny is still an excellent player. It's not like in 2 years, all of a sudden Stastny's washed up. Like, I will take Stastny on my team any day of the week. And getting back to the production, like, you know, he's kind of around the 50 point mark at this point in his career. Stastny's excellent on faceoffs, and he does kind of that dirty work for Ehlers and Laine, digging pucks up. Like, he's a distributor. Mm-hmm. He's going to get Ehlers and Laine the puck. That's what he did so well in 2018.
It's also, I mean, you know, Ehlers and Laine are different players than they were in 2018.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So their games have improved. So even if Stastny's game has taken a bit of a step back, and I don't think it's a huge step back, Ehlers and Laine have elevated their game. So that line, to Dave's point, you know, as the 1B line, I mean, you know, that's a pretty good...
I'll take 80% of Paul Stastny any day of the week over most players. Like, there's a comparable here with Eric Staal to Buffalo. Like, Eric Staal is 35, right? 36?
I think Stastny's got more in his game than Eric Staal.
No, does. I'm not saying that they're... Yeah. Completely equivalent.
He's saying the situation.
I'm saying the situation here where you've got Jack Eichel as your first line center, Scheifele obviously in Winnipeg. Scheifele, you know, is what, 3 or 4 years older. The point is, you needed to bring in a veteran that you know what, like, you know what you're gonna get out of Stastny. I just think, like, if you were to go around the league, and maybe we can do this, but if you went around the league and looked at all 31 teams' second line center, Stastny would be in the top 15 or top 10.
Well, sir, you now look at how the Jets go down the middle. Yep. When they're going Scheifele and Stastny, pick your poison if you're an opposing coach, putting out your defense against the Jets' top two lines. Which one are you going to send out your shutdown pair against? Because the other line is likely to feast in that situation, Dave.
You know, the other thing to factor in is the recovery. I mean, you know, one thing Paul Stastny spoke about in his conference call yesterday was talking about how he's had to learn to adjust his game. So he's not the same player he was 2 years ago, but he goes, I'm also not the same player I was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so to that point,
he's a very smart player.
That's very smart. And I think that was the kind of, you know, the message he was sending was, I've adjusted my game and I've had to learn to change, to adapt. And I think to Ezzie's point, he's a very smart hockey player. And I think, you know, when he's put in a position with two guys, to your point, Drew, who have elevated their games, we know how much we talk about Nikolaj Ehlers' game. We know how much Patrick Laine's game has changed. So you've got two players who aren't the same young guys who only thought offense. And I'm not maligning them. I'm just saying, like, you know, that's generally what all young players kind of think about. And now you've got guys who are improved in almost all facets of the game. So you've got the makings of what I think is going to be a very good line for the Winnipeg Jets.
They're not young fawns anymore, Laine and Ehlers, and now the three of them together, Stastny, Laine, and Ehlers together, are going to be a very formidable matchup for an opponent to have to play against.
And the reality is, even if you don't go with Laine, Ehlers, and Stastny, the fact of the matter is you still have an opportunity here to, you could throw Connor on the second line, you could throw Ehlers up on the first line, you could, you know,
put
you,
Laine up with, you could put, whatever you want to do.
Think about it, you could put Wheeler with Stastny. I'm just saying that you've got options. And that, I think, is the point Ezzie was making earlier, was that here's something that the Jets haven't had in a while, is that
since they had Stastny in the beginning, right?
That's
like
right.
That's the whole issue here, right? Like, you brought in Cody Eakin. We all know, I mean, Cody Eakin's a good hockey player, but we all know that Cody Eakin was not the answer on the second line, right?
That's
like
right.
That's pretty evident. And so you bring somebody back that you had a lot of success with a couple of years ago, and I think it's going to work out really well.
Time will tell. Jets also, of course, re-sign. This happened later yesterday, in case you missed it. They re-sign RFA Mason Appleton. Appleton gets $900,000 a year for the next 2 years, as he's certainly going to fit in the Jets' bottom six rotation as well. When we come back, we talk about the DeMello signing, the Jets re-signing Spezza and Beaulieu on the back end. And we'll talk about the Jets' defense up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
If you didn't really like that game, then we're not going to be able to agree on anything. You know, like, that, his sticks so many times knock things down. His passes are on the tape. That was a pure kind of, I don't know if you can call it coach's porn, but when you're watching hockey video, you know, that's pretty darn good.
I'm not sure if he should have called it coach's porn, but Paul Maurice certainly did, talking about the performance of Dylan DeMello. That was back in February of this year. It seems like it was about 10 years ago at this point in time. But
Dylan DeMello yellow.
Back in February, February 20th, when Dylan DeMello played his first game for the Winnipeg Jets after being acquired from the Ottawa Senators just before the trade deadline, Paul Maurice referred to his performance as coaches porn. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzie. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Quick, Drew, who sings Mellow Yellow?
They call me Mellow Yellow. I don't know, but
Donovan.
Donovan. Did you just look that up? Because there's no way you knew that.
No, the reason I know that is you know, this is as an aside here, obviously, but
this isn't in the show plan.
I know you're not used to
thanks
those.
For the qualifier.
Yeah, you guys aren't used to after 12 years non sequiturs here, but I love listening to that song with my kids. They love it. My daughter especially loves it. So.
I thought you were going to segue to
you're listening.
I like drinking a lot of Mellow Yellow.
I thought you could have gone there. I didn't expect the kids reference there, but
I never liked Mellow Yellow. I never liked Mountain Dew. I was always more of a Dr. Pepper or Dr. Skipper guy.
I actually expected to see you do the Ocean Breeze TikTok challenge.
The guy where he got that
new
truck out of it from Ocean Spray. Yeah, that was pretty cool. Anyways, Dylan DeMello, this happened a few days ago, of course, before free agency begins. The Jets re-signed him to a four-year contract that's worth $12 million in total. Salary cap hit of $3 million per season. There certainly was a lot of interest from the Winnipeg Jets, obviously Dylan DeMello's camp, and Winnipeg Jets fans to see him return to the Jets organization after a very steady, very, you know, sort of a seamless fit on the Jets' right side of their defense last year when he came over from Ottawa. Again, fills a hole for the Jets. You don't pay too much. I mean, you're not, to Ezzy's point, he made it off the top of the show. You're not going to get a lot of offense from Dylan DeMello, but he played nicely with Josh Morrissey. They seem to complement each other. And I would argue you don't need a lot of offense from the back end, you know, from DeMello when you have Morrissey and you have a guy like Pionk there as well.
Well, I mean, what was the one thing we talked about? Consistency. That was the, you know, there was certainly a lack of that with last year's defensive crew. And I think, you know, some people were lamenting that it should have only been a three-year deal, not a four-year deal. But the truth is the Jets don't have a ton of depth in the prospect pool on the right side of their defense, right? Mm-hmm. So DeMello, I mean, he's 27 years old. So this is a perfect deal, I think. I mean, you're going to get him in his peak years.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talked about it. He talked about what it meant to, you know, be able to set down roots here in Winnipeg and how much that means to him. And you know what? Look,
and his wife expecting their first child in January.
Yeah.
Congratulations to them on that.
For sure. And I think that's one thing people factor in. Like we're from Winnipeg. We love it. But, you know, there's always that kind of talk of, oh, will people sign here? Well, here's a guy who was sought out by quite a few teams.
Yeah, would have had a lot of options.
Or would have been sought out by a number of teams. We know that people were interested in him. Obviously, they couldn't talk to him in advance of. But the fact is that he would have had a ton of interest. And so here's a guy who's saying, I'm choosing this situation. I like this group. I like the city. I want to sit down my roots here. And I think that's a testament, not just for the one player, but I think it speaks to what someone else had mentioned years ago was, if you have a winner, I don't care if it's minus 40 or what. Mm-hmm. The reality is players want to play for a winner.
Well, and Stastny didn't have the Jets on his team, no moves.
Right. And DeMello's from Southern Ontario, right? I believe Mississauga, if I'm not mistaken. Mississauga or London, I think. So it's not like, I mean, it's not like he's coming from California. And we know that some players, you know, even if they're from a quote-unquote warmer climate, will still like playing in Winnipeg.
London,
right?
You're right.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, it was such a good fit, and that's why both of these moves, guys, I think make a lot of sense, right? Mm-hmm. Dylan DeMello is not TJ Brody, right, who obviously signed with the Maple Leafs. But we don't even know if the Jets were serious about acquiring TJ Brody. Like, we talked about this, I think it was 2 weeks ago, Drew, or maybe 3 weeks ago, and, you know, Dylan DeMello hadn't signed with the Jets yet, and I was saying, you know, I wouldn't necessarily take that as, you know, he's not re-signing. I think he wanted to see maybe what's out there. And we have to think, guys, that, you know, him and his agent were probably talking to other teams prior to free agency, even though there wasn't a courting period this year like there was in previous years. Mm-hmm. But I think DeMello and his agent were probably saying, you know, if we can get, you know, 3 or 4 years and we can get the right AAV, then, you know, we'll stick around in Winnipeg. And I really like that because you always hear, you know, like was mentioned by Dave, you always hear that, you know, the Jets are never going to attract UFAs. And that is, you know, true to a certain extent when you're talking about the big names.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the Jets are probably never going to get guys like Taylor Hall or Alex Petrangelo, but I don't think the Jets ever plan to get the big fish.
I had a boss many, many years ago who used to say about Winnipeg, it's the hardest place to get people to come to. And then it's the hardest place to get people to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So that once you come here, you can appreciate it, you can fall in love with it, but getting them to arrive here to begin with is the difficult part.
You know who loves it? I mean, Dale Hawerchuk loved it. Temu Solani loved it. I mean, Mark Scheifele loves it living here. Blake Wheeler has made Winnipeg his home.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Minnesota's not that far away. But the point is, guys, like let's not sell this city short, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's not sell this organization short. Yes, it's not Vegas. It's not Arizona, and it's not Florida or California. It's Winnipeg, but it is a really good place to raise a family. But back to DeMello, I mean, he's just a guy, as Dave mentioned, he's a solid guy that you know can give you 18, 19, 20 minutes on the right side. And one of the stats I wanted to bring up, guys, that I thought, I think it was Sean Tierney, or maybe it was, you know, Jay Fresh Hockey, if you've seen him on Twitter. He does a great job of, you know, putting up those visualizations. Dylan DeMello is one of the best players in the league at not giving the puck away. And that's important because we know that one of the key elements of a defenseman is moving the puck out of your own zone, right? And gaining, you know, the neutral zone and then having a successful entry. So Dylan DeMello just does those little things right. He'll block shots. Mm-hmm. He'll play on the penalty kill. He's not going to give you a lot of points, but he's just a very reliable defenseman. And that's what the Jets need.
And that's why, you know, Paul Maurice referred to him as coach's porn, because Paul Maurice can throw Dylan DeMello, to your point, as he out on the ice for 20 minutes a night and almost have no worries about the performance that he's going to get from DeMello. He knows that he's going to be, in, you know, for the most part, in the right spot at the right time. He's going to make the right decision. He plays a simple, easy, not flashy game, but every team needs a player like that who can just, you know, be consistent on a night-in, night-out basis.
He kind of reminds me, like, you know, I always bring it back to the Devils because he's one of my favorite players of all time, and we've had him on the show a bunch of times. He kind of reminds me of like a Ken Danico, right? Like Danico used to play with Scotty Niedermayer, who's obviously a Hall of Famer, but it's just one of those guys that you know what you're going to get out of him. Mm-hmm. And he's a player that everybody on the team loves and they want to battle for, and DeMello just makes so much sense. So do the Jets need to maybe, you know, add another defenseman?
And we'll talk about that.
Well,
Maybe,
maybe not. It depends if Ville Heinola factors in.
Well, we're going to talk about the gaping hole on the left side. We're going to do that a little bit later on in the show.
I don't know if it's that gaping.
Well, we'll talk about it on the left. We'll talk about the hole on the left side a little bit later on, because there's still a lot of consternation about that, the absence of a left side signing. The Jets did sign two other defensemen yesterday. Re-signed, I should say. Right. Nathan Beaulieu gets the 1 year, the 2 year contract worth $1.25 per season, and then Lucas Spezza comes back for $800,000 per year. Two guys who, you know, certainly aren't flashy. Again, you know, they're depth guys way more than anything else. Beaulieu's probably your third pairing left side defenseman. You know, if he's playing in that second pairing role, the Jets probably have a little bit of an issue there. Mm-hmm. But guys, you know, if the talk is that you need 10 NHL caliber defensemen, these guys certainly fit the role as NHL caliber defensemen. Beaulieu more than Spezza to some extent, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, most people probably have Beaulieu penciled in at the third pairing left side along with Tucker Pullman, and I think that gives the Jets that's a fine, you know, third pairing. And the Spezza signing was a bit surprising. I thought, you know, there's also that familiarity aspect. Mm-hmm. He obviously liked the fit, and you know, the reality is, you know, would you rather have, you know, oftentimes people talk about the idea of blocking prospects, but, you know, what is going to happen in terms of those young guys who are on the Manitoba Moose, the Gavankes, the Kovacevics, the potentially a Sandberger or Heinola, you know, wouldn't you rather those guys be getting, like me, my personal preference is always to have those guys play 20 minutes in all situations with Manitoba Moose in the AHL than to be sitting as the 7th and 8th defenseman with the Winnipeg Jets. So, you know, you can talk about the benefit of practice, but practice is only, you know, I mean, like Allen Iverson once said, practice, mm-hmm. practice. You know, to me, you have to get those guys game action. So I think that is the most important thing. So if you have a guy like Lucas Spezza sitting in as your 8th defenseman, mm-hmm. fine. Who cares? Because he's a veteran. He knows his role. If there's a pinch, if you're on a road trip, you can't get a guy in time, you have to throw him in for a game, fine. But the reality is, you know, you've got Niku, who's, you know, I mean, I would think Niku could be in a top 6, but I suspect based on the way his usage has been to date, he's probably your 7th right now. I mean, and we're going to talk about it, what happens with the second side left side defenseman right now?
Absolutely. If you say you need 10 NHL with an asterisk caliber defenseman, the Jets have 6 under contract right now. You add Niku, he's 7. You add Noje, when they get him under contract, he's probably your 10th defenseman. And then you add in Heinola and you add in Sandberg, and boom, there's your 10 defensemen that you would potentially need at some point in time during the course of the season. When we come back, more Jets talk. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in Dave Manuk's living room by Dave Manuk. Ezra Ginsberg's here, too. We want to hear from you at Illegal Curve on Twitter. Our question of the day is, with the moves the Jets have made so far, how does that impact their outlook for next season, their trajectory for next season? Send us your comments at Illegal Curve. Send us your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest. It's actually chock full of the latest Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Ted Wyman. Teddy, how are you? Long time no speak.
It has been a while, guys. I'm doing great. And how are all of you?
We are doing very well ourselves. A happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, Ted. Appreciate you joining us on this Thanksgiving long weekend. Been a busy Thanksgiving, certainly, with all the news about the Winnipeg Jets and around the NHL with the draft and with free agency. So let me ask you our Illegal Curve question of the day. Given the moves the Jets have made, the acquiring of Stastny, the re-signing of DeMello, some of the other depth moves, how does that change, or how would you evaluate the Jets' trajectory for next season as a result of those moves?
Well, that's a very good question. It's an excellent question of the day, I must say, because realistically, they set out to get a second-line center, which they did in acquiring Paul Stastny. Pretty good move, I would suggest. A familiar face, a guy who's played with some of the players who are probably going to be on that second line before, well-known to the team, fits in well. I think everything about that move makes a lot of sense for the Winnipeg Jets. But they've really only done half the job that they set out to do, because everyone saw the playoff series against Calgary and saw how badly the defense got beaten up. And everyone has said since the very beginning of that, or the end of that, I should say, that they need to improve on defense. Well, they have not improved on defense. Signing DeMello is a great move. I think he's a good player. You bring in these depth players in Beaulieu and Lucas Pisa, they'll help, but they're not even going to be expected to necessarily be in the top six. So that does not necessarily improve this team. They still need to make some kind of a move to get better on defense, or else the job hasn't been done. That's my opinion on it.
And Ted, I don't disagree with you. And, I've got your snapshots column in front of me here in today's Winnipeg Sun. And, you obviously talk about, or write about, I should say, about Paul Stastny. But you do write about what you just mentioned with Nathan Beaulieu and Lucas Sabiza joining the fold, and specifically how Beaulieu addresses a physical need on the back end for the Jets. But in your opinion, is the big wild card here, the development of Ville Heinola and whether he can play that second pair, left side role? Because obviously, that's a big ask, for a 19, 20-year-old defenseman. But I look at that Jets blue line and I say, well, if Ville Heinola can play the way he did in a short sample size like he did last year, maybe the Jets don't have to go out and acquire, anybody else to play on that left side.
Right, or Dylan Sandberg, right? I honestly think that Dylan Sandberg might even be closer to ready to play in the NHL. This does happen quite a lot with players who've been playing at high level of college hockey, and I think he's a player that may be the wild card there, and Hanoi as well. There's no question in my mind that he could be ready to play, and perhaps those are going to be the guys on the left side behind Josh Morrissey. I have to say, though, that I just, those guys were going to be here all along. I just don't think that what they've done is going to put a lot of faith into the fan base that this has been an improved, or going into training camp, that this is an improved defense over last year, when it was realistically a tire fire. They did a pretty good job of piecing it together, to be totally honest, given how everybody left on them and Dustin Byfuglien had retired. They pieced together a pretty decent unit, which used probably about 10 different players over the course of the season, and muddled through with much help from goalie Connor Hellebuck. But they were not great, I don't think, at most times, and they absolutely were not very good at all in the playoffs. Like, the Jets had, of course, losing Trifley and Laine and Mason Appleton really killed the Jets in that playoff series, but also their defense just simply couldn't control the Calgary forwards, and that made all the difference in that series.
You know, Ted, when the Stastny trade got swung, it started to seem like the writing was on the wall for Brian Little. Obviously, when Kevin Cheveldayoff had spoken before the draft, he didn't have an update on Brian Little, and he said they were going to have conversations. Then he obviously was asked about it in yesterday's availability, and he provided the update saying that Brian Little was not going to play based on doctor recommendations for next season. But he wouldn't go into anything further than that. So, I mean, what do you think in terms of Brian Little? Like, I mean, obviously it's a tough blow for a guy who's been such a, you know, quote, good soldier for the Winnipeg Jets organization. But do you think this is the last time we've seen Brian Little play the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I'll echo what a lot of people have been saying on Twitter, and that's that, you know, you feel sick for the guy. In all honesty, I can't think of too many guys that have been through that Jets dressing room that are just more classy and decent guys than Brian Little. He's been nothing but good as a player and for the fans and as a citizen and with the media. Everything about him, I think, has been really good, and it just is terrible that what happened to him, and just such a freak thing that happened in a hockey game. Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised, Dave, if he was able to come back and play at this point. I just don't see how that's going to be possible. It seems like the recommendations have been that he is not going to be able to do that given the injuries that he sustained when he was hit by that slap shot. And most likely his career is over as far as I know. I mean, I can't speculate too much because I don't know anything for sure, but it just seems kind of like that. And the fact that he can't play this season means he's going to have to go on long-term injured reserve, it would seem, unless he does officially retire. And then I'm not sure exactly how the contract structure works. That's all very complicated. But, you know, if they're going out to get a player like Stastny, who statistically isn't really that different from Brian Little, I think he brings a different dynamic, however. You know that just meant that they've known, I think probably in the back of their minds, at least they've known that they weren't going to have Brian Little this season, and that really is a shame.
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Ted from his work with the Winnipeg Sun. You know, Ted, it was 5 days ago that the Jets made their first round selection, 10th overall, and Cole Perfetti out of Saginaw was their selection. You know, for a team always searching for that second line center, it seemed like fortuitous, certainly, that he fell further than a lot of people thought he was going to. You know, he's obviously, it would be a surprise to see him as a regular in the Jets lineup this coming year, whenever that coming year begins. But Cole Perfetti sort of jumping into the Jets lineup, do you foresee him being able to play as a center at the NHL level, or do you think that he's going to eventually have to transition to the wing?
I think that was a game-changing pick for the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think they expected to get him. You hear that all the time, you know, we didn't expect he was going to be there. I don't think that was the player that they were expecting to draft in this draft at all. I think they thought he was going to go much higher, and he looks like a blue-chip prospect. He's a pretty good, you know, looks like a really good player, high scorer, very intelligent guy. There's a lot to like about what they're getting there, and I do think that conceivably played, you know, a domino effect into the acquisition of Paul Stastny, because, you know, before they were looking for somebody to be their number two center, not necessarily just for next season, even for two seasons. They might have been looking for somebody as a more long-term solution, but you pick up Cole Perfetti in the draft and you're looking down the road, you're saying, you know, when he does get to the NHL, he's not going to be in the bottom six. That guy is pegged to be a top six player all day. He likes playing center. He wants to play center. I'm sure that's where the Jets envision him. And then you go and you get a Paul Stastny for a very reasonable price out of Las Vegas, who has 1 year left on his contract and can possibly be the perfect transition player. And if Stastny likes it here, and if it looks like he's fitting as well as the Jets think they do, and if Perfetti maybe doesn't look like he's going to be ready within 1 year, maybe you can sign Stastny again to something short term, and you just keep going along like that. I do see him as a center, Dave. I I think that's exactly where they want him. The fact that he can play wing as well is just a bonus.
You know, Ted, we talked about Brian Little earlier, and we talked about the defenseman, Paul Stastny. The Jets have addressed that second-line center role, and I agree with you in the sense that maybe the Jets do bring in one other defenseman, but really now I think you'd agree the attention is going to focus to some of the RFAs. And, you know, some of the names that I don't think have been talked enough about here in Winnipeg, and this obviously isn't a criticism, you know, to you or anyone else. I think we're, you know, included in that. You know, Jack Roslovic is a guy to me that's very interesting as an RFA because, you know, he's obviously played much more than a guy like Jansen Harkins was going to get a raise coming out of his entry-level deal. But, you know, last time I checked on Cap Friendly, you know, the Jets had just over $2 million in cap space and they could always, you know, use Matthew Perreault's contract and try to move that out. But what do you see happening with the Jack Roslovic deal? Because he's certainly due for a raise.
Yeah, and there's also the LTIR situation, Ezzy, which, again, is complicated. Scott Billick did write about it in today's paper. If anybody wants to check it out, it explains it a little bit. But it is very complicated, but it does. Chevy did say that if they put Little on LTIR at the beginning of the season, that it would open up some space for them to potentially sign a defenseman. That was particularly asked of him, and he did say that it would allow that. But when you look at that salary cap situation right now and you know that Roslovic has to be signed and Harkins has to be signed, there's not a lot of money left there to go out and make some kind of a big acquisition. So it isn't going to be easy to fit anybody in. It's probably not going to be anybody that's making a ton of money. That being said, a lot of those contracts that came out this week are a lot lower in terms of annual average value than I think a lot of people expected to see. Torrey Krug in particular, I think it was 6.5 for him, and he's going to make only $4 million in the first season. Like that's a lot lower than what you're expecting to see on these huge deals. So, and there's a lot of short-term deals going on right now as well. I think Krug and Jacob Markstrom were the only long-term deals signed on Friday. Everything else was 2-3 years, some one. And maybe that gives the Jets an option to have a look at what the market is like and potentially add something. But yes, you've got to get those other guys under contract as well. And Jack Roslovic is a player who, I don't know, he hasn't exactly wowed anybody in his first couple of seasons, but he's not going to make what he made on his ELC. He's got to make a little more. And what kind of length of term are you going to sign him to? I'm thinking bridge deal, given that you just don't even know his potential at this point, but I guess we'll see how that works. And Jansen Harkins has, you know, probably a little bit of a raise coming his way and maybe a bridge deal as well, because he's been pretty good this last season. He showed a lot, I thought, in his time with the Jets and played well in the playoffs. So again, you know, the salary cap, Chevy's been talking about it all week. It's not just fitting in, you know, these free agents, the UFAs or whatever you're bringing in. You've also got to remember who has to be signed this year and who has to be signed next year, because it's going to be a flat salary cap again, most likely. At least that's what they're projecting. And we all know that there's a certain number 29 that's going to be a free agent again in not too long of a time, assuming he doesn't get traded. So there's a lot still to fit into that salary cap situation.
Ted, you just walked right into my next question, which is perfect for me. Because that was what I was going to ask you. You know, does this now put to bed, at least for now, the Patrick Laine trade rumors now that they've gone out and acquired Paul Stastny?
Well, I hope so, Dave. But it depends on what the real motivation for trading Patrick Laine is for the Winnipeg Jets. Is it, I think it throws out the window any notion that they were looking to trade him in order to get that second line center or get a top defenseman, because they're not looking for that anymore. They probably couldn't do it in terms of salary cap. Maybe they could do if they're giving away, you know, losing Laine's contract, they could get a similar contract coming back, I guess, for a defenseman. They're not going to be looking for that second line center anymore. But you've been hearing the kind of return they want, and it's so much the teams don't even want to pay it. So I just can't imagine who they'd possibly be getting that would make that work. But then the other part of what I was trying to get at is, if their motivation is that they don't think they can sign him long term, if they think that they're going to be headed to arbitration after next season and that's going to be a problem, if they think that maybe Patrick Laine and the Jets aren't a great fit anymore, then that's a different reason for trading him, and that could be still something that they're going to listen to. So I'm not going to suggest that it's being put to bed, but purely from a hockey standpoint, what does he want more than anything? He wants a center that's a good distributor and he fits in well with. Well, they just went and got him a guy that he doesn't even have to anticipate how it's going to work. He knows how it's going to work because he played with them before. So either he's going to be with Scheifele or he's going to be with Stastny. That's a pretty good, you know, you can't complain about those centers if you're Patrick Laine. So I hope that it puts it to bed, but there's more complicated scenarios there than, you know, than just who is going to play center for the Jets along with Laine.
Ted Wyman covers the Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. You can read his work in that fine paper alongside the work of our friends Paul Friesen and Scotty Billick. Ted, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Always appreciate your time and insight. Have a great long weekend, buddy.
Always a pleasure, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Likewise, Ted. Take care. When we come back, we look back at the NHL draft. The Jets' selection of Cole Perfetti, 10th overall, is our topic of discussion. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
First, our family would like to thank the Winnipeg Jets and all of Dale's loyal fans and friends for their love and support through his very tough fight of stomach cancer. He was a great hockey player and a very special man. I want you to know that he loved Winnipeg and always felt a special connection to the people of Manitoba. We both consider Winnipeg our home. Your love and support meant so much to him. Thank you. Now I am thrilled to announce with the 10th selection in the 2020 NHL Draft, the Winnipeg Jets select from Saginaw Spirit, Cole Perfetti.
One of the best moments of the NHL draft this past week, that's Crystal Howardchuk, widow of Dale Howardchuk, speaking eloquently, speaking passionately about the city of Winnipeg and the love affair between the Howardchuk family and the city of Winnipeg, and then announcing Cole Perfetti as the Jets' 10th overall selection in the 2020 NHL draft. Perfetti, of course, from the Saginaw Spirit in the OHL, where he tore up the league and put up impressive point totals in his season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So the Jets get Perfetti 10th overall, and, you know, there's all, oh, I can't believe that player was always there, and every team says that. But in this instance, I do believe that there was a pretty good element of truth when the Jets said it this time. They did not expect Perfetti to be there. You know, I think Jack Quinn getting drafted by the Buffalo Sabres might have been a bit of the upset that resulted in Perfetti dropping down to 10th overall, but the Jets were all too happy to jump on the opportunity to have him join the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really opened up when the Senators took Jake Sanderson 5th overall, right? Because, I mean, Tim Stützle goes 3rd overall, and then with the second pick of the first round, because, of course, they had 3 picks, you know, you weren't sure, Dave. There were even rumors that Ottawa might go with Askarov,
right?
So when it was Jake Sanderson and Jamie Drysdale back-to-back, that meant that Marco Rossi was falling. That meant that Cole Perfetti was falling. And obviously, you know, Lucas Raymond going 4th overall to Detroit wasn't a surprise because most scouts had Raymond top 5, top 6. But a lot of scouts and a lot of the prognostications had Perfetti going as high as 4th. Mm-hmm. So to me, this reminds me of 2015. IC was at that draft in Florida. And I remember, you know, we were jumping on with Huss and Lawless. And I remember, you know, Craig Button came on and he said, like, I would have taken Kyle Connor in the top 10. And the Jets got Connor at 17th overall. And if you look at all of the players that were taken, obviously the Bruins had 3 first-round picks.
In a row.
Matt Barzal, Kyle Connor, I would take over, you know, no offense to Zach Senyshyn or Jacobs Borrell. I mean, Jake DeBrusk is a pretty damn good player. But the point is, this reminds me a lot of 2015 when not only could Cole Perfetti have gone ninth overall or eighth overall, he could have gone top five. So this is a guy that, you know, has so much talent. And the greatest thing for Jets fans is we don't really know when the Ontario Hockey League is going to resume. I mean, there's always the chance there is no OHL this season.
Sounds like there's not going to, if there's going to be an OHL, it's not going to have body checking.
Well,
yeah, which is just utterly bizarre.
Well, fighting I get. I mean, I have no problem with fighting. You can't take body checking out of hockey at the junior level.
That appears
then it's,
to be the rule.
It's not junior hockey at that point.
Well, it's just not really hockey. It's,
right.
It's house league, Timbit sort of hockey.
The good news for Jets fans is I guarantee you that you're going to be able to watch Cole Perfetti play in 2020 because he's going to be on the Canadian World Junior team.
Well, the World Juniors, which are only a couple months away, are going to be a stacked World Juniors because who knows what the state of the NHL is going to be at that point
in
time.
Well, you're going to have Alexis Lafreniere playing for, and I'm just talking about Team Canada here. I mean, you're going to have Lafreniere, you're going to have Byfield, Seth Jarvis is a guy that could make Team Canada. I mean, they are going to be absolutely stacked for that exact reason you just mentioned, Drew, because we don't expect the NHL to resume until early January, earliest. Gary Bettman said so himself, right? So, I mean, it's going to be very interesting, but for Jets fans here, Dave, they're going to get to watch Perfetti play at the international level. We've already seen him, excel at, the U18 levels. So just a great draft pick for the Jets. He's not a guy that's going to step right into the NHL, but, he's a guy that, has a very bright future in the NHL and, also just a great kid with, being a Scholastic Player of the Year and just, you can just tell that, he's cut from the right cloth.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things that, we don't really know everything about these kids, but then when you start to do some digging into them and whatnot, there was a great feature. I've got it on the website because I thought it was so worthwhile to kind of get to know Cole Perfetti, what kind of person he is. And honestly, you watched it and you're like, this is a really good kid. Like, forget about the hockey aspect, which obviously is the reason we're doing the show, and it's important, but this is a really good person. This is a kid who does, at 17, was doing like charity work in Saginaw in Michigan. And by the way, a little sidebar trivia, who's the only other player the Jets have drafted from the Saginaw Spirit? Anyone?
Jimmy Lodge?
Yes, Ezzy.
Nice.
2013.
That's why you're the expert here, Ez.
That's right. So
hopefully the Perfetti pick works out a little bit better.
I don't know if I'm an
Jimmy
expert.
Lodge
I don't know
selection.
What I am. But
don't touch Jimmy, who had a hat trick in the final game of the AHL season in Texas, or like one of the last games. He hadn't scored a goal all season. It was hilarious. But anyways, but this Perfetti is he, everything about that first round went well for Winnipeg. I mean, I thought the Crystal Howerchuk moment was phenomenal. I thought it was such a nice testament by the organization to bring her in, given everything she's gone through in the past, year with Dale, for them to make her a part of it.
Yep.
I thought it was a really special moment. And then you add in the fact that, there's a kid that has a connection to Howerchuk through Perfetti, who knew him a little bit. And again, I just think
the symmetry getting in the 10th year of the Jets returning.
That's right.
At the 10th overall pick. The numerology and the symmetry was special and significant on Tuesday night.
Right. And I just think the fact is, just quickly going through this in terms of not rushing, and I'm always a guy who wants prospects to be able to marinate and develop at their own pace and not rush them to the NHL where you're going to break them. What you end up doing is this Stastny deal, again, allows the Jets to not rush Perfetti and allows him to develop properly. I mean, look, if he makes the team, he makes the team. If he forces the decision, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But the reality is you're not forcing him into that decision. So I think it's a really good pick. I think he's going to work out. I mean, every, and I'll quickly say this, but every article, and I hate when they draft, when we see winners and losers.
Yeah.
It's been 5 minutes. How can you declare a winner and a loser? But the fact is that every article said this kid is going to be a star for 10 to 15 years in this league. So I think from that perspective, the Jets got a winner in Cole Perfetti.
When we come back, Michael Trakos, the national hockey writer for Post Media, is going to join us, talk about day one of NHL free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. It's a great way to reach us with your comments and or your questions. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply on our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Michael Trakos. You know Michael, of course, as the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, happy Thanksgiving. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. Doing pretty well. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And, let's see if the Jets are going to be active again today. Really kind of curious to see how these next couple days unfold with all the log jams that are happening at the forward position.
Especially at the forward position, yeah. That's the Taylor Hall is still weighing his options. Mike Hoffman, other prominent forwards are weighing their options and haven't signed a contract as of yet. You know, what were your thoughts after day one in the books, Michael? What was your sort of overriding thought? When you were writing yesterday and you're watching everything unfold on TV and on Twitter and everywhere else yesterday.
Yeah, you know what? I was a bit surprised at some of the moves. I guess the main talking points were the goaltenders that kind of switched locations. It was a kind of a game of musical chairs. Everyone needed a goalie, and there were just so many goalies available in the market that you knew there was going to be a lot of action. So I was a bit surprised that Vancouver ended up with Holtby, that Calgary actually won the bidding war for Jacob Markstrom. Happy to see Henrik Lundqvist go to Washington, where he should have at least a decent chance of winning a Stanley Cup. And obviously the Matt Murray trade to Ottawa, I thought was just a perfect move for a team that, give them another year or two, and they kind of look like what the Jets look like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, in the sense that it's just going to take a little time for all their prospects to kind of grow into fruition. But what I ended up writing about yesterday was just all the grit that kind of was kind of snatched up. You watch Tampa Bay and how they won the Stanley Cup, and obviously it was with skill, Kucherov, Point, and Hedman. But that Pat Maroon pickup last summer was huge for them. I think getting Barclay Goodrow, Blake Coleman, Bogosian, and Shen at the deadline really complemented that skill nicely. And you saw a lot of teams kind of take notice of that. Toronto getting Wayne Simmonds was a perfect example. Montreal getting bigger with Josh Anderson. And there were similar moves throughout the day. And but we'll see. We know the salary cap is not going up. So I think a lot of teams are sort of handcuffed as to what they could and could not do.
And, Mike, we want to get into, obviously, T.J. Brodie. That news came out late yesterday, kind of early evening, that the Leafs signed T.J. Brodie. But, you mentioned Wayne Simmonds there. And, I saw, some criticism, on Twitter that, Simmonds isn't necessarily what the Leafs need, but considering they're up against the salary cap and, Simmonds is a guy that's from Scarborough and he's a guy that the Leafs have looked at before. Apparently Simmonds also left money on the table. Does this not just make a ton of sense for a guy that can come in and be a veteran for some of the younger players and can add, a little bit of sandpaper on that fourth line?
Oh, definitely. You're not getting the Wayne Simmonds that scored 30 goals in the NHL. You're getting a guy that's got a ton of miles out of his body that is going to play a fourth line role with Jason Spezza, and combined those guys are making I think just over $2 million. So you've got two legitimate fourth liners who know how to play in this league, who are great role models for still a young and up and coming team. I think we kind of sometimes forget how young these Leafs are just because they've been in the league so long. But majority of their core is still under the age of 25. So he's going to help a lot. He's just a workhorse. I get to see him a lot in the summer just because, like you mentioned, he's from the Toronto area and he works out with Matt Nichol of BioSteel. And it's amazing how strong this guy is and just how tireless of a work ethic he has. So that's going to rub off, I think, on the young players in the dressing room in the same way that Jason Spezza was just a great role model for them. And, it's a one-year deal. It's a low salary. It's really low risk, high reward in my mind. And it's the perfect kind of player that the Leafs were looking for. They needed a little sandpaper. They needed a little edge, especially with no Nazem Kadri and Kyle Clifford going out the door. So I'm not saying that this is a guy that's going to be Tom Wilson for them. He's also not going to be a 30-goal scorer, but as a fourth liner, it's a no-brainer.
Well, speaking of Ontario kids that the Leafs went out and got, Michael, they went and signed TJ Brody. And was it because he went 4-for-4 in that skills competition like 15 years ago? The Leafs released that video. It was pretty cool. I mean, he was, what, 10 years old and in front of 15,000 people at a skills competition, goes 4-for-4. But, you know, obviously that wasn't the reason they signed him. But what do you think of that signing for the Leafs?
Isn't that so cool, though?
it was awesome.
That. I'm sure everyone did. When you're a little tyke and you get called up on the ice and Matt Sundin is sort of feeding you passes and you go 4-for-4 in a skills competition, it's remarkable that you end up on the same team that you're doing it for. So great story. And I like PJ Brody. He's not the flashiest of defensemen, obviously. It's not like they got Petrangelo or Torrey Krug, but I think this is a guy that they desperately needed. Just another kind of, he's not going to go in there and try to score goals. It's not like they're getting a Kevin Shattenkirk or something like that, where PJ Brody's now thinking to himself, okay, now I got to be a sniper from the back end. He just has to be a steady defenseman and let Morgan Rielly and let some of the other guys on that team just, do the work. And if he can feed passes up to Marner and Matthews and Tavares and Nylander, I think Leaf fans are going to be happy. And, this is a team that when you look at their back end, you probably need another TJ Brody. But, now that when you add him to a group that includes Morgan Rielly, Jake Muzzin, and they've got a guy coming over from Finland, in Lehtinen, that looks like he could be a top four potential defenseman. And now you got room for your young guys to sort of grow. Leafs management was really happy with what they saw out of Rasmus Sandin, at parts last season, but you're not forcing him into your top six now. Instead, he might play in the minors. He might just be in and out of the lineup. And I think that's the perfect scenario for a young up and coming defenseman. So, we'll see. I think ultimately this team is going to get judged on what they do in the playoffs, but at least they have some pieces there where you're saying, okay, you can see where the team is headed, whereas a couple weeks ago you're really wondering what direction this team was going to go in.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Michael's the national hockey writer for Post Media. And, you mentioned off the top, Michael, that the goaltending carousel was in full force yesterday. And, from my perspective, my humble perspective, it was one bad contract signing after another as it related to the goaltenders. For the last, couple of months, we've all been raving about the performance of Anton Khudobin for the Dallas Stars. He ends up only getting a 3-year deal worth, just over $3 million per season. Why is he worth that amount of money, whereas a guy like Matt Murray, who lost his starting job in Pittsburgh, is somehow inexplicably worth more than $6 million per season?
I'll just say, how many times do you see a 34-year-old goalie get a raise, Ezra? A 34-year-old has been a backup his whole career, basically. It doesn't happen. And, kudos to Khudobin for, signing the best contract of his life at the age of 34. It is remarkable. It's a great story. That's basically why Matt Murray is getting more, is because he's not 34 like Khudobin. As good as Khudobin was, you're looking at a guy who probably just signed his last contract in the NHL, whereas Murray is only 26 years old. He's won 2 Stanley Cups, and yet you're still probably looking at him saying, yeah, we haven't seen the best of you yet. This is really where you're entering your prime as a goalie. So I know it's a high cost. At the same time, have you seen the Ottawa Senators books? Even with paying Murray that much
true.
Money, even with the dead salary on their books, with I think Dion Phaneuf is still getting a paycheck, this team is still not even at the salary cap floor. So, maybe they should have added a couple more zeros to Murray's paycheck, because they're going to have to sign some other players just to even get to the floor. That's how, that's how thin they are financially. So, I agree with you. I think they overpaid for Murray. At the same time, Ottawa's not the sexiest location, and I'm not really breaking any news here. I don't think a lot of teams are really, or a lot of players are really kind of jonesing to go there. Maybe they will be when they see Tim Stützle and Jake Sanderson and see Brady Tkachuk further mature. But at the time right now, the only way you're getting a goalie of substance is by overpaying, and I think they had to do that deal.
So, Mike, you know, you were just talking about the Ottawa Senators and trying to get to that cap floor. Wanted to ask you about the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are obviously at the cap ceiling. And, you know, Tyler Johnson, I think it surprised a lot of people that Julien Brisebois and the Lightning put him on waivers. We know that Anthony Cirelli needs a new contract. We know Mikhail Sergachev needs a new contract. You can throw in Eric Chernak in there as well. I mean, how do you see this all playing out? Because, you know, they might have to move out more than just Tyler Johnson's contract. It might have to be, you know, an Alex Killorn or maybe a Yanni Gourde or someone like that. Like, how surprised were you that a guy like Johnson was put on waivers and nobody's claimed him yet?
Yeah, I guess Seattle's not able to claim a guy, right, because they're not in the league yet. that's where he's ending up. That's all the rumors, I guess, are going, because this is a guy that's from that area. But I was surprised that he ended up on waivers. You know, Tyler Johnson, I thought, still has value. I thought there was going to be a team willing to trade him if Tampa Bay was willing to accept maybe part of that salary still. But yeah, there's further moves coming, obviously. Alex Killorn has got a limited no-movement clause. I think where he has to say what 10 teams he wants to go to or 10 teams that he doesn't want to go to. Either way, he's probably heading out the door. I thought Montreal was going to be a good fit until Josh Sanderson ended up going there, but there's going to be a market for a guy who's 31 years old, plays a power forward role, has now won a Stanley Cup, and they do need to clear space because of all the guys you mentioned. You know, I know they got sweetheart deals on guys like Point and others, but, you know, when you've got Cirelli, Sergachev, and Cernak all coming up and with the threat of offer sheets, and I was told by at least one agent that he expects there to be at least two or three offer sheets coming Cirelli's way. That tells me that Tampa Bay really needs to get their ducks in a row and really needs to sign these guys ASAP, because they could be in a real financial trouble here. You want to keep Cirelli. You definitely want to keep him because he's, you know, Patrice Bergeron light in my mind. But I really question whether they're going to be able to keep all three guys the way that, you know, the way that guys just want to get paid, especially after winning a Stanley Cup.
Michael Drakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, always appreciate your time and insight. A happy Thanksgiving again to you and yours, and we'll do it again real soon, buddy.
Perfect. All right. Have a happy Thanksgiving as well, guys. Let's see if we can get some more movement today.
Yeah, let's have a little more fun this coming up.
Thanks, Mike. Happy
here for the rest of the day. Thanks, Michael. We'll take care. When we come back, more on the moves the Jets have made. We want to hear from you. Send us your text, 129090. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. We'll open up the inbox up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, if that's a possibility, I'm really excited. I think, you know, just playing with those two guys, or like I said, there's a lot of guys up front, but playing with those two guys, just it was like second nature. It was just really easy playing with those guys, especially two guys that want the puck, two guys that, you know, very skilled, dynamic, and, you know, can score from everywhere. So for me, it makes my job easy just trying to get the puck as quick as I can. But, yeah, and it's always fun playing with young guys. You know, it brings a kind of spark energy to you and excitement, and it's nice trying to help these guys out.
That was from yesterday. That's new, old, new Winnipeg Jets centerman Paul Stastny talking about returning to Winnipeg. That's the Jets' big splash, not coming in free agency per se, but coming via trade from the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see if the Jets have any more moves throughout the course of today. We'll bring him to you right up until 12 noon today here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We've been asking you for your feedback about the Jets' moves thus far, so let's check out the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. We asked you, you know, what's the trajectory for this team? What's your outlook for this team entering the 2021 season as a result of the move so far? The Last Jedi says the Jets need one more top four D and they are a playoff team. So that's going to be, you know, that's the big hole that everyone's pointing to still, that left side defense. How do the Jets fill that if they're able to fill that? Rob the Revelator says the team is definitely better today than it was going into the qualifying round. However, that defense is still very behind in talent compared to other contenders. Beaulieu and Spezza are not the answer. And then Ryan, DJ Biff Winnipeg says they're better than last year so far, but not by much. They need a significant add on defense if they want to be a contender. A lot of good comments coming in via Twitter. Let's check out the text messages. Send your text to 129090. I would say the Jets went from a middle of the pack team to the very good tier. We need size and veteran presence on D. Love the show, guys. That's coming from Crystal. Thanks so much, Crystal. Love your feedback. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. One more comment via Twitter. Texter Shale says he wants to know how much our low COVID rate, relatively, might influence free agents. Who would want to go to Arizona or Florida right now, given the global pandemic? Some interesting food for thought coming from Shale via text message there. So that is the Odds Shark inbox for this Saturday. Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets. We find them in the Odds Shark inbox. And remember, oddsshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddsshark.net.
Yeah, it's an interesting question that Shale brought up, and that would have been a good question for Tom Lynn, actually, last week, Veritas Hockey,
yeah,
who's, of course, a player agent, and you know, it's really tough for me to answer that question because you heard Dylan DeMello talk about it, and you heard Paul Stastny talk about it, right? When you're factoring in, you know, what team, if you do have control over what team you go to, right? It's not just salary. And, you know, we just had Michael Trakos on talking about Wayne Simmonds, Dave, and mm-hmm. apparently Wayne Simmonds could have got maybe $500,000 more on another team, right? So it's not always just about money. Anton Khudobin mentioned this. I heard him on NHL Network Radio yesterday. He was saying that if him and his agent got a certain amount of money and they got, you know, 3 years, I think it was 3 years for Khudobin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they would sign with Dallas. So maybe Khudobin, you know, on an aggregate value gets maybe $1 million, $1.5 million more bucks. But when you're talking about COVID, I mean, I think that there's a lot of other implications. Some players like to be closer to their hometown where they live.
Where they spend their year-round home.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we all know that the cases of COVID-19, unfortunately, are higher in certain states in the U.S., and certainly with Manitoba only having, you know, 1.5 million people or however many people we exactly have, we have less cases than Ontario, you know, less cases than Quebec. But it's really hard to say if a free agent would pick Winnipeg or, you know, Edmonton or, you know, one of those cities over, you know, Toronto or Montreal because of COVID. But it is an interesting question, and it's, you know, something that we definitely didn't factor in, you know, before there was a global pandemic.
That's true. We weren't planning for the global pandemic before the global pandemic. Dave, let me ask you this question. So that's been the question of the day, you know, the Jets trajectory. So we know the move, the big move is the Stastny acquisition. Everything else has been sort of re-signing your own guys, depth moves on the back end particularly. What's the Jets' trajectory now for next season as a result of the moves that they've made thus far?
I think this is still a team that's trending upward. I think this is a team that can still challenge. I don't disagree with Ryan. I think you'd like to see one more solid move on the back end to really kind of solidify them. I think, you know, the other thing you want to see is you want to see those young guys, that class of 2015, really, even obviously their RFAs, and the only one who's right now signed is Mason Appleton. You want to see those guys get opportunity. I think that's a big thing from Paul Maurice next year, that he's going to be reliant on not just heavy minutes for the Scheifele line, but really to kind of roll four lines, give everybody an opportunity to contribute, because I think you can get a lot more out of Jack Roslick. I think you can get a lot out of Jansen Harkins. I think you can get more out of Mason Appleton. So I think you have the horses up front to get the job done. We know who Connor Hellebuyck is. We know what he is. So to me, it's a function of that big question mark. I mean, and we don't know. It's such a big unknown because we don't know the status of Ville Heinola. We don't know the status of Dylan Sandberg. Can these guys come in and contribute and be workhorses? I mean, we saw it to a certain degree with Ville Heinola. He came in, he made an impression. Everyone liked what he was able to contribute, but ultimately he was sent to the Moose and then went back home to Finland. So we don't know. It's a big unknown. So maybe these guys can step in, and if they do, I mean, they're projected to have, you know, high ceilings, which isn't a bad thing, but it's a big unknown. It's a big question mark. And if the answer is they're not yet ready, which again, to me, is not a huge, it's not a castigation of who these guys are as players, because they're young defensemen, and we see young defensemen oftentimes playing junior or playing in the AHL, having more time, not being thrown into that fire, thrown, given that responsibility. So if that's the case, then, you know, then what do you do? You don't want to have to bump everybody up. That's the key. And you know, like I said, I think Sammy Niku, given the opportunity to heal, he could step in and he could be a more effective player for this Jets organization. So there's an opportunity for him potentially. I mean, obviously he's a left shot, but he likes to play on the right side. So that's, he's not really your left side solution there. So I would like to see the Jets go out and make one more move to get that left second pairing left side defenseman to really solidify things, and then that way you have Heinola or Sandberg playing in the third pairing role with Tucker Pullman, and it gives them a opportunity to really kind of ease those guys in and not have to toss them into the fire.
Again, on a you know, acquire somebody, you know, the free agency list for guys on the left side at this point, and we're going to talk about it, you know, coming up, you know, during the next 90 minutes of the broadcast, there's not a lot of great options on the left-hand side. So I think if you're looking to solve that problem, you're looking to acquire somebody who might, you know, from another team that might be in some salary cap trouble. But again, you're looking for a bridge, a guy who's only going to be there probably for a year, maybe 2 years, assuming that the development of Sandberg and the development of Heinola continues, so that those guys, one of those guys, can eventually be your left side second pairing solution behind Morrissey.
Guys, we're going to have months to talk about, you know, whether Dylan Sandberg or Ville Heinola is going to play the majority of the season with the Jets. You know, it goes back to you originally asked about the trajectory of the team. Quite simply, the Jets are a better team than they were when the season ended against Calgary, because Paul Stastny is a better center than Cody Eakin. Mm-hmm. Like, right there alone, the Jets are a better team. Because essentially, they're the same team. Right? Like, they're going to lose a few players. They lose Anthony Boteto. But, you know, we talked about Lucas Abiza, Nathan Beaulieu. I mean, you re-sign Mason Appleton. So, I mean, they're better for that reason, because they have a better center on that second line, right?
Yeah.
And, yes, Dave, I agree with you 100%. I mean, we talked about that in the first hour. I think you'd like the Jets to maybe, you know, solidify that top six with a defenseman, but I think that the problem is, because there might be a Dylan Sandberg or Ville Heinola there, who's that guy going to be? And I agree, you're not bringing in a guy on a 4 or 5 year deal. Like, Sammy Vatanen to me is not Sammy Vatanen is one of the top left side defensemen on the free agent market.
Still available. Yeah.
He's not a guy that you want to bring in. And a lot of that has to do, guys, with the salary cap. You got to sign Jack Roslovic still. You have to sign Sammy Niku and Jansen Harkins. Those three guys together are not going to make $10 million, but they're probably going to make, you know, $4 million, $5 million together, and you only have $2 million. That LTIR space is not going to come into effect until closer to the season starting.
If you're acquiring a left-side defenseman via trade, you probably have to shed some salary.
Yes.
You probably have to send out Matthew Perreault
or
figure out something to do with that contract
at this point. And that's what the other point I was going to make. Like, to me, your top six, your top nine is basically set, right? Like, Jack Roslovic, you probably pencil in with Adam Lowry and Andrew Copp,
yeah,
right, Dave?
For sure.
So to me, right now, is Jansen Harkins centering your fourth line with Matty Perreault and Mason Appleton? I like that line. Like, I have no problem with that line. But then, you know, if that's not your fourth line and you want to bring in a veteran, like, you just saw Toronto, for example, sign Jason Spezza and Wayne Simmonds. You saw Nashville sign Nick Cousins. Like, Nick Cousins would be a third or fourth liner. Colorado brought in Mikko Salomaki. Like, those types of players, that's the only other moves I can see the Jets making. Like, to me, right now, over the next week, 2 weeks, it's all going to be signing your RFAs. Like, you got to get Roslovic, Harkins, and Niku done. I might be missing someone there, but
Nogé and Cease.
Yeah. So and there's no reason to think they won't get Nogé and Cease done. You know, no problem. Those guys will have a big role on the Moose, right? So I mean, that's what I'm looking at, and I would like to see a fourth line that plays more and have more of an identity,
which we've talked about all offseason. That fourth line has just been the dog's breakfast for so long that, you know, Paul Maurice never really could. He never trusted them enough to put him out in any significant role besides a few minutes in the first period, or if the game was out of hand, you know, if it was a lopsided victory or a lopsided defeat in the third period. So if you can get a fourth line and have an identity for that fourth line, then, I mean, you know, the forward group is probably the envy of a lot of teams throughout the league. When we come back, we're going to look at the goaltending carousel that went on yesterday in free agency. Another signing to announce. We'll come back with that after the break. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.